Hello, welcome to Star Wars Spelt Out. I am your host, Josh Chapman. And today, it's the finale. It's season one finale, episode 10 of Andor. The first season's done. We've just finished watching the finale. I've just finished watching it. Let's get straight to it here. Let's welcome Catherine on. Everybody wants to know what Catherine's thinking. No one wants to know what I'm thinking. Hi, Catherine. How's it going?
I actually don't know how much I can talk tonight. It was so good, but it was just so intense the whole time. Like, my heart was just pounding, and oh God, it was just amazing. And the whole season, oh God, like, I'll just focus on episode 12, Frick's Road, and God, it was just intense.
It certainly was. I'm a little bit sort of like, wow, where do we go? Where does Star Wars go from here? I think I said last week, I prefaced it and sort of said, oh, look, we'll talk about the season as a whole in a week or two. We'll get sort of all the returning guests back and whoever else was on. But we may or may not have a late addition to the podcast as we go along, but it's probably just going to be me and Catherine. But, you know, the original, the OGs here. We started this journey, whatever it was, 8 weeks ago, 8 or 9 weeks ago. And we're at the end now. It nailed it, really, didn't it?
It nailed it. It did. It's just, it was so good, you know, to see everyone in Ferrix again, and all the characters we love on Ferrix, you know, standing up and fighting the Empire and doing as Marva would have wanted, using her funeral
to rebel
against the Empire.
I sort of poo-pooed last week and was like, oh, you know, they killed off Fiona Shaw off screen. You know, maybe she's going to jump out of the coffin with a bomb strapped to her chest. But I wasn't a million miles away. And I did actually say maybe that, you know, because they were talking about the funeral, I said maybe the whole town will turn out to the funeral. And that was the case. And that was pretty something as well, that they were like, oh, we're just going to let 30 so of this women's Rotary Club do the little funeral down the main drag, and then the whole town turns up 2 hours earlier than they're supposed to do as well.
Yep. And, yeah, it was all a plan, really, for that Marva set in motion. And she didn't know it, but the words of Nemec just echoing through the streets and proving true through the actions that happened at her funeral, that those small acts lead to the overthrow of the Empire.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's try and backtrack this, because if we get stuck on bits, we'll just go over the same bits over and over. But we sort of kick off at the start, and it's the son of the guy who was the shop owner, wasn't it, that basically is making the explosive device. And it's quite interesting, because there's a little play where you see he's working away and you can see the hologram from a distance, and you're like, that's weird. Why is he looking at the Andor hologram that everybody's so obsessed with throughout this whole series? And then, you know, we cut back to him later on. It turns out he's got a picture of his dad up, which is quite poignant. So that sort of sets the tone, really, doesn't it? A little bit of close-up soldering going on.
Like real soldering.
Yeah, it just takes you back to like electronics class in high school, like soldering with soldering an LED on a thing and melting the solder with the soldering iron. Yeah, that's quite funny. They never really. I'm assuming that they do that in Star Wars. That's how stuff gets put together. You haven't really seen it that close up before. It's always a lot of sparks and stuff. So,
yeah.
And then we check in on Do we go straight to Bix after that? I think we might. Who's still sort of having a bad time. Well, come on. What's going on, Catherine? That's not like you. I was a little bit longer this episode. But yeah, we check in with Bix, who's still basically having a bad time of it. But yeah, it kind of, word sort of starts to get out that Cassian's in town, and the guy who took the message tells his best mate. And then that bloody guy, that's the guy that owes him money at the start, isn't it?
Who sells him out. That's who Cassian owed money to, and he's the one who brought the muscle.
That's right. He brought the standover guy who was just like,
"You just told me to stand here."
Yeah, you just told me to stand here. So he's obviously still waiting to get paid. So he's caught wind that basically, it seems like he's been tipping off the Empire the whole time, really.
Yeah. He's been an informant the whole time.
And meanwhile, the world's worst undercover Imperial agent is just sort of like swanning around again, being watched by Cinta. And I mean, we could talk about it because it doesn't really matter what order we do things in, but she took it very personally, didn't she? She basically was like, went and shanked him at the end.
Yeah, well, he had made her, so, she had to act.
Yep.
But, yeah, you're right. With a knife, it's very personal.
Do we think she killed that family? It's becoming more and more likely. I don't want to turn this into a Blue Harvest Horse versus Will kind of thing here, where it's divided the team. But it does sort of seem that way. She does seem more hardened after it, doesn't she? Really.
It looks like she's capable of it, but I just question whether she's capable of the kid there.
Yeah.
I could see her doing the officers, the people who, enlisted into the Imperials.
Mm-hmm.
But she might have a harder time with a kid who had no choice.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We could spend forever on debating whether Cinta did something or didn't do something, really. But Vel turns up. So she turns up and doesn't really get the warm welcome she's sort of looking for, really. She barely even looks at her. She's just like, I'm all about the job here. It's all about to kick off. And, it does. It just does a beautiful way of sort of raising the tension, doesn't it?
Well, it starts with, again, the opening score, the opening theme, like that's been different every week in ways that I can't explain.
We need Xanthi for that. They'd be all over that. Xanthi would be all over it. I wanted to send them a message and just say, hey, what do you reckon of all these weirdo instruments? I know they're not really real-life instruments, but I'm sure they would say, oh, yeah, that's a bit of a flute and that's a bit of this and that's a bit of that. So I'll have to get their thoughts.
There was definitely a flute with stuff stuck onto it.
Yeah. That's good enough. The props master are like, that's space flute.
Yep, space flute.
That passes. We've got a big container here down at Twickenham Studios of just '70s public school musical instruments that don't really work anymore. We're just going to strap some bits to them and say space flute.
Yeah. But that opening, it had like the trumpets, the wind sound of an orchestra. It was like, it's been building this whole season up to this point. It's been filling out and it's like, yeah, it's coming. It's coming, Andor is coming.
Can I find a theory to you? Sorry to interrupt.
Yep.
I know the show's called Andor, but is it specifically Cassian Andor?
So Marva Andor.
It really felt like, not just Cassian Andor, but Andor, even the his foster father, got a bit of a show into this. But it was just funny because they're doing the funeral procession. And we'll jump around here I've forgotten his best mate's name and he's got the brick. And it looked like the Andor logo was on the brick, like the way that they wrote Andor. Well, that was the tie-in, that basically that's why the logo looks like it is. So,
and the music they were playing as they were progressing down the street sounded like the Andor theme. Mm.
And then he smacked that trooper in the face with the brick.
Good on him.
But it really felt like that Marva Andor was the one who inspired the people to rebel. It wasn't Cassian at all. Like we kept talking about. I mean, I know that there was a time with the manifesto, and it certainly sparked Cassian. But as far as the person who sparked the people, it was Marva Andor who did it.
Yeah, that she did it. Like, talk about another just brilliant speech. Like Fiona Shaw.
She came back. I know. I was so salty last week of like, I can't believe they killed her off screen. And then that's it. And I'm like, I should have known better. And oh my God, BD leading the funeral procession.
B2 emo. Like, oh, it was just, that broke my heart because it's just like a little dog in a funeral procession. It just broke me. But yeah, and then he's the one projecting Marva saying those words, and you could see Luthen in the crowd, like Luthen listening, and he's inspired by, well, I don't know if inspired, but he's like, yes.
But he got it. That was the thing about Luthen. Like when it all kicked off and he was in the middle of it, he was going like, oh, these just aren't disposable people that I need to just brush aside in order to further my cause. You know, he'd already gone, oh, look, I can just kill off the other bloke in his team. Like, that's all that matters to protect my secrets and things. And that's what happens. They basically cut to it and they're like, oh, yeah, they all died. And, well, you know, job well done, everybody, and let's move on. And there he was. He got caught up in it. You know, he saw the sort of the way that it affected people up hand. And then he got caught in the middle of a freaking skirmish. And he was just like, oh, you know, there was a bit of that. All these people who sit above making these decisions and pulling the strings got stuck on the ground. You know, Deirdre as well, obviously, stuck on the ground in the middle of something where it all became very real.
Yeah, he's... And those words of rebellion, you know, I'm sure it then played a part in him looking at Cassian at the end and going, yeah, join. You know, and I'm sure at that point, if he'd just run into Cassian in the street, he wouldn't have killed him because he'd be like, no, that was your mother. That's who she was. And
yeah, you're actually not a mercenary here. You're actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even the bit, like, I know we could jump around. I keep saying that. When he's in the tunnel and the message gets relayed about what Martha was saying, you know, that he was a good boy and he would do the right thing and, you know, he would do great things and all that kind of stuff as well. It's just like, oh, and Kat, I was watching with Kat and Kat lost it at that moment. Kat's a crier as well. And she lost it at that point.
What was it? I love you
more than anything wrong than you can do.
More than anything you can do wrong or something like that, which was just, oh, God, that was just a gut punch.
Well, and the bit just before that where he goes to, you know, he goes to sneak into the shop and his father's brick, he goes to climb and he put in the, there's these, his father's bricks in the wall as well. So that was, that didn't get clobbered into anybody's head. That one, that one made it into the wall. So basically Cassian decides to come back. So although he is smart, like he's actually fully aware of what's going on and that they'll be waiting, looking for him and that it's probably a trap and all that sort of stuff. So he seems to be more intent. I don't know. Well, what is his goal when he first get there? Obviously he wants to get Bix out when he knows that she's still being captured. Is it really just to pay his respects? Is he just to pay his respects? Maybe just from a distance and then he was going to leave.
Yeah, I think so. Or there was a bit of he didn't know what else to do in a way. Like, you know, that feeling of, you know, as almost the first thing he says is our last words were, you know, we had a fight, you know, and he said, I wanted to take her when I left. You know, so it's like an overwhelming guilt that he left her behind.
Yeah. And then obviously he gets the the message that he, you know, his mum, you know, was fine and was proud of him, and then finds out that Bix is still in custody. So the sort of the sense of purpose. So like, I think he was just going to hide in a roof and watch the procession, and then get on a ship and get out of there.
Yeah, but then he hears more about what's happened. But he's like, yeah, we'll get Bix out, and everything will go to, and get his friends out, and get B2 Emo out. Oh, I was so worried for B2.
Oh, when he got kicked over?
Whole episode. Yes.
As soon as I saw it, I'm like, Catherine is not going to like that one bit.
Oh, I'm like, that Imperial, if I see him, he's a dead man.
He's going to get a brick to the head.
Oh, bricked so bad. So, yeah, the, I don't know his name, but the guy who then, like, put a rope around B2 and dragged him out. Hero. Yeah. What a hero.
Yeah, the real heroes. The real heroes. It was sort of good. A lot of those secondary characters kind of came to the front. And there's, you know, there's that douchebag sort of handsome Imperial officer who's sort of organizing the riot. And then when it all kicks off, he gets knocked, you know, he's scrambling and running. Like I said, there's nothing like an Imperial getting comeuppance. There's, you know, it's very satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just building that whole episode, you know, Luthen in the crowd and Cyril and...
Even the little hat swap?
What was with the hat swap?
I don't know. Was it something where they were trying to be discreet and not pretend that they didn't know each other? Like, they're like, oh, we're just going to meet on this transport and I'll give you a local's hat and I'll give you a hat. Or it was, I don't know, there was like this little bro down moment, wasn't there?
Yeah. I mean, at first, like when they're on the bus not talking, I'm like, yeah, of course, you don't want to look like a duo. You just want to look like random people. But then, yeah, they'll pass hats to each other. I was like half expecting there to be like a message or something in it. And then they just put them on. I'm like, what?
It might have been like maybe there was a few things that, because Cyril probably didn't have Ferrix appropriate clothes. So his mates probably just got him a few odds and sods. And maybe every 10 minutes he's passing him a poncho or I don't know, something that was quite funny. And it was, I did like the moment where they're sort of trying to get to the front of the procession, and the Empire being dicks to them, and he's just like, "Oh yeah, I remember that."
Yeah. But they were so close to Luthen. Did Luthen know? Did Luthen recognize Cyril?
No, I don't think he saw his face. I don't think they saw each other's faces, because remember, Cyril didn't see his face, because remember he got asked about whether he saw the face of Axis. So he didn't recognize him. But, yeah, Luthen's just sort of hanging around there. And it was that weird thing. It was like, oh, they're there. And then, like, Deirdre goes out onto the street as well. And Cyril's down there. Luthen's there. Cinder and Val are sort of off to the side. Cassian's sort of overlooking the whole thing. And, yeah, then the anvil goes off a few hours early. And the New Orleans – it was a New Orleans funeral march, wasn't it, basically?
Yeah. Yeah, that real funeral procession. Yeah, we watched the Queen a few months ago. Mm. This was a
didn't go for quite as long as as Her Majesty.
Yeah, but there was the time grappler, you know, dinging out the bell like Big Ben was rung.
Yep.
The time grappler kicking the
stormtrooper out of the window. That's got to be a meme of just like, you know, me, my problems or something. You know what I mean? Like just that of kicking the stormtrooper out the window. Somebody do that. Somebody start memeing that. That was pretty amazing. Kat got a bit worried because he did that sort of douchey Imperial guy's like, you know, go deal with him. And the stormtrooper just comes up the thing. And I thought he was just going to clock him with the anvil, but a boot out the window is just as effective, really.
So satisfying. And see the little stormtrooper going down out the tower? Yeah, it was good.
It's just like, I just keep thinking of that Chappelle show. Have you seen the Chappelle show, the Rick James thing with Charlie Murphy? Have you seen the... Yeah, and it's just like, if you come any closer, I'm going to kick him out the fucking window. Like, somebody's going to cut that clip with it as well. Like, all right, there's too many memes to do. Somebody else do that. Somebody with more patience. That was pretty awesome. So, the funeral procession sort of comes through. and it sort of, you know, swells and swells and swells, and the Empire are getting a little bit more edgy and a bit more edgy and sending more people down. And yeah, like you said, Marva plays the message over the town, and it kind of builds and builds and builds, and then shit's on, and it's a proper scrap.
That's, yeah, a proper riot. And
but I don't think the town went specifically. I mean, some people did, you know, obviously the son went with the explosive, but they didn't all have weapons in hidden or blasters or, you know what I mean? Like, most people were just there for the funeral. They got, you know, riled up.
I think some knew it was.
I think some of them did, but happen. I think, you know, yeah. 95% of the people there were just there to pay respects, I think, initially anyway.
Yeah. And then they saw Marva getting disrespected, and so they were like, nah, it's on.
Yeah.
It's on.
And that was just, I mean, when they all start, like, speeding up, and it's, you know, the music, it was, you know, like Vive la Revolution. It was like a bit sort of, you know, French Revolution kind of thing. And the swell, I was like, oh my God. Like, I was watching it, like, oh my God. Like, they just started, like, yeah, it was a moment. It's up. I mean, it was, I don't know. Like, I don't like comparing episodes, but it certainly, like, the Prison Break was magnificent. The Heist was magnificent. But this was, like, another level. It was a more emotional level. You know what I mean? It wasn't just thrilling, but it was an emotional sort of culmination, I suppose.
Because, as I say, my heart was pounding through that, like, on edge. I moved from, you know, from my couch with my back, you know, against the cushion to, you know, having shifted right forward, so on the edge. And, yeah, the heart was pounding, rocking, because I'm just like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? You know, anything could happen.
Yeah, we know that Cassian's safe, really. I know you said you had a bit of insight on who was coming back next season and things, but that doesn't necessarily mean what state they'll be in or anything like that as well.
No. And that, only, you know, saw that, Cyril and Deidre said, oh, yeah, season two has started.
Yeah, so Cyril gets involved, and Deidre gets caught in it. It's quite harrowing, you know. She loses her blaster, she gets trampled, and she gets a real dose of reality too, you know. Like, some people try to drag her off, and she is freaked out. The only thing that makes it even more freaked out is when she looks up, but it's bloody Cyril, you know, 2 inches away from your face, who's just saved your skin.
Yeah, she was having a panic attack right there.
Yeah,
like that was her having a panic attack. But, you know, it's interesting with Deidre. You know, her, you know, Skyping into the ISB boardroom. When they're talking about Krieger, you know, the whole lot of them getting killed, and she's like, we needed them alive. A dead man can't, a dead body can't tell.
Can't talk. Us anything. Yeah. That was a weird choice. And it just seemed to be, they were being just typical Empire, short-sighted, just like, nah, we got to get a win, you know, off the back of, what was it, get the taste of the, you know, the heist out of the Emperor's mouth, basically, which is a, troubling visual image. he's not a bloke. He probably practices very great dental hygiene. She gets knocked over in the ruckus, and Cyril, you know, grabs the blaster and sort of pulls her to safety. And then there's just, it's this sort of weird, you know, where she's still obviously panicking and then confused, and Cyril's sort of, I don't know, looking like he wants a kiss or something. It was all a
bit. He did. That was just adding to the tension of, oh, don't kiss her.
Yeah.
Because you could feel it. He's too close.
Yeah.
Too close.
And, you know, we didn't really see how that resolved. I assume she, you know, who knows, she composed herself but I mean, the implication is that he's in her, you know, he's in her debt. She's in his debt now. What that looks like, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yep. And we don't know what his mother's wrath will be when she discovers that he's been stealing out of her safe.
Well, if he manages to get, you know, promoted within the Empire or becomes part of the official Empire, I don't think she's going to have too many qualms, really, because it'll just be, shut up, Mum, I'm in the Empire now. What are you going to do about it? I'm not a desk jockey anymore. I'm kicking
heads. Uncle Harlow will be so proud.
Yeah, Uncle Harlow, the great mystery of Uncle Harlow. Let's just duck away very briefly from Ferrix, where it all went down. We do have to check in Coruscant and check in on Mon Mothma. And I want to give a little shout out to our friends Eric Struthers and Turbo, the resident Mon Mothma Genevieve O'Reilly thirsty boys. The moment where she sort of takes the thing off her neck, I know Struthers has got something about ladies' necks and things. I was going, oh, Struthers will be loving this right about now. There's a very nice, very attractive neck acting going on here from Genevieve O'Reilly in the back of the limo.
Yep. And as she prepares to then put Perrin in it, you know.
Yeah. So she effectively knows that she's being listened to, obviously.
Yeah.
And then presents a cover for where the money is possibly going.
Yes, so presents a cover that if there's any irregularities discovered in her banking, there's plausible, you know, Perrin's known to have gambling issues.
Yep, which also means that if another deposit comes in from somewhere else, it's less sus because it just means they've had to borrow money to cover for his stupidity, basically. Nice little name drop of Canto Bight in there as well.
Oh, yeah, always good. Always good.
I'd hate to think what he gets up to there by himself. She's just like, go to Canto Bight and you know, sow your wild oats or get up to whatever you get up to. Betting on the Fathiers.
He'd do that.
I think there's a deleted scene of The Last Jedi where they like run past a steam room or something kind of. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
There's like an alien in a towel and stuff. I just like to think that he's just there, you know, in the corner, probably not even wearing a towel, just buck naked, talking about his losses, you know, getting ready to go to the all-night buffet. He would be a pretty interesting guy to party with on Canto Bight.
He's the worst. so we get that and we get a confirmation that her driver definitely is ISB.
Yeah.
Like it was suspected before, but confirmation, because he was reporting to Blevin, who we haven't seen in a number of episodes. So
he's actually the agent back, on Blevin. Mon Mothma.
Yes.
Like it's his pet project.
Yes. Yeah. So that was interesting. And then the only other time with...
Oh, sorry, Catherine. I was just going to say, they kind of imply that they're watching her, but they don't really have anything on her. Like they know that she's not a fan, but they don't really have anything on her solid.
Yeah, they haven't got her actively plotting against the Empire. They know that she's trying to mitigate some of the evils of the Empire, that, she's not a big supporter, but, they haven't got her actively doing anything.
Like treasonous that they can pin on her or anything.
Because they... Unlike the ordinary folk who get rounded up into prison for walking on a beach, they need something actual concrete.
Yeah, a little bit more meat on the bone, don't they?
Yeah.
Which is good because it makes sense that season two that she's still on Coruscant and she has, you know, because I think it's established in Rebels as a point where she basically tells them, you know, she doesn't actually say that she's a rebel, but she tells the Senate that she's quitting or whatever, and she's just like, this place is corrupt. You can go spin on it. I'm out of here. And there will be a point where she's pretty much completely in with a rebellion. She's not even on Coruscant anymore, but we're not there yet. At least not. I mean, it's going to be three episodes a year?
Yeah.
Well, we should. We should detour and just do a complete 180 here and a shout out to our number one listener. Welcome back, Bob Iger. This is his favorite podcast, as we have said many times. Hello, Bob. Welcome back. I'm sure you were just listening anyway, but you know, welcome. Congratulations on being back in charge. Maybe he could do a 180. Maybe he can put through a little, maybe he's gone, maybe, you know what? we're all about quality content on this Disney channel.
Bobby I. Can you please do us all a solid and have a long conversation with Tony and Diego and give them whatever they need to make the five seasons as promised? That we know you want Bobby I. We know you want it, Bobby. Just take away any impediments. Just
make three. Make anything more than two. You know, two's, if we get to, we're getting
never
two.
More than 12.
Never more than 12. But if we, yeah, you know what? If we get 12, that's what we've been promised and we'll be happy. But hey, if you came halfway through and said, guess what? We've decided that we're going to, you know, we extend this story. We're going to go back to the scripts. We're going to spread this out. Two more seasons of Andor. You know, I know that it's not the most watched Star Wars show, but it's in the scheme of stuff that gets watched, it's up there. And I know you keep saying, Catherine, it's probably going to win some stuff. It's premium television.
It really is. It's premium television. You look at the crossovers between the production of Andor and production of Chernobyl and the people on screen, off screen. You know, this is the quality that we are talking about. This is those, like, Stellan Skarsgård's speech. Like, good Lord, it is so good. It needs to be up there. It was reported that it's, you know, not as well watched, but who knows what those metrics are,
compared to
where
what?
They're getting,
like,
from.
Comparing it to some of the most watched stuff in the world. So it's up there. So come on, let's just chill out. Anyway, sorry, I digress. But we had to acknowledge, we do say that this is Bob Iger's favorite podcast, which we're making a few assumptions on, but we couldn't not touch on that anyway, especially if he's listening.
This all started probably back when we did the Rogue One commentary.
Yeah.
So
I've got to find that clip, don't I?
Yeah.
Of where I actually say that Andor would be, the story of Cassian Andor would make a good TV show.
Yeah, and I probably just ranted and raved about how much it would be, how good it would be, how much we want it.
I'll find it for the round table. So when we do the round table, I'll find the clip and I'll put it in. I'm not going to do it now because it's late. Yeah. But, well, it's not that late, but, you know, the World Cup's on. I want to watch the bit of the World Cup before I go to bed. So, yeah, let's just double back over to Mon Mothma, and then it's basically, you know, they're suspicious of her. They've got nothing on her, but now he's brought the husband into the web of lies as far as he's part of the greater lie, whether he doesn't really know anything, but he's just been in, you know. And then the old meet and greet happens.
Yep.
Selling the daughter,
you know,
up the river.
It's not a casual, hey, we've got lots of people coming over, you should come over and bring your son. Oh, no.
No, it's like here's mum and dad, and we're going to sit down and we're gonna talk about this.
Wearing the traditional blue, like the blue that was part of the outfit that she wore that Leader wore for a youth group. Both Perrin and Mon were wearing that blue, was part of their outfit. So it's like, okay, this is a traditional meeting.
Mm.
Yeah, so they know.
Shout out to Matt Frost as well, who got the DC Talk reference that I made last week as well. The only person who got it, I think. And then started sending me, like, Christian rap band clips on YouTube, which I didn't click because I didn't want my algorithm to go crazy. It's only cooking videos and DVD extras from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. That's basically the two things that I watch at the moment. We'll tie a bow on Mon Mothma before we come back. So she's still in Coruscant. She's still behind the scenes. She hasn't been found out yet. She's had to sell the husband up the river a little bit, and she's got to have to get into bed with the gangster to basically buy herself some time. And she's basically just on borrowed time now, really, isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah, that. You know, this is paper over the gaps, but will they find the gaps in her accounts? Who knows? But she now knows she has sold her daughter. She has sold her daughter.
Yeah.
Basically.
Into something that she despises. Because she's living it, basically. Okay, we've covered Mon Mothma. Let's kick back around. Where did we leave everybody else at the end of this? So Cassian, sort of in the background, is working his way through the tunnels. Again, you always said the tunnels would be important. And gets into the hotel, manages to find Bix, who is in very bad shape and doesn't really want to leave. Oh, the bit where she's like, oh, they'll hurt me or they'll be mean to me if she basically tries to walk out the thing. And oh, poor thing. God.
Yeah, it's awful.
And she, so when she's listening at the window, she can hear the music and things as well. Now, what actually, you can tell me this. What were they all chanting as well? Was it something, the sky, search the sky?
Yeah.
Raise the sky? It was,
sand and sky. Yeah, I'll have to watch again and with captions. I think it was something like sand and sky, something like that. It took a while to clicking because it wasn't quite clear. But, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes sense because sand is an important part, an ingredient in bricks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She went to the kiln. Then, it all sort of kicks off and everybody sort of gets knocked around a bit there. And Cassian gets Bix out of the prison, gets into the shipyard where his mate's on the ship with a couple of other characters. And BT gets out, which is quite good. And they have a little conversation. It's like you always say you're going to come back as well, which was quite sad. But he did look like he really meant it this time. You know, it was clearly a man who wasn't looking out for himself anymore, that it was he'd taken on the responsibility of other people as well.
So I do want to see that reunion with B2 because, gosh, B2, like, he's just the sweetest little droid. He just wants a hug. It still breaks my heart thinking about last week saying to Brosco, oh, you could stay. You don't have to leave.
But the fact he was leading the procession, like you said, you know, he was sort of, he was very much front and center and broadcasting the hologram of Mira as well. So that's quite nice. So those guys get out in one piece. And then we see Vel and Cinta basically packing all their crap up and getting off. So they were sort of, they were sort of there, but they weren't super involved. I mean, obviously Cinta kills the agent. But they're all, it's quite funny because they meet, it's just weird seeing Vera and Luthen just in the street having a conversation. You know, it's so cloak and dagger everywhere else. And then she's just like sitting on the ground drinking a Coke or something. He just kind of rocks up.
But, you know, they weren't needed because the people of Ferrix were doing it themselves. They didn't need to incite anything or be part of it. They just needed to make sure that they got away clean.
Yeah, they were basically going to wait for Cassian to get captured and then nab him when he gets put in the hotel.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even sort of like, we don't even have to kidnap, we just have to make sure he dies. So that sort of obviously all changed. And as we sort of double back around to when it all kicked off, Luthen gets sort of caught in the middle of it, basically, and gets a better idea of what it actually takes from on a personal, on the ground level, really.
The up close violence of it, but also what a rebellion means, because you know, you think about Luthen's speech about what has he given up, and he's given up everything, and he's been doing it for a long time. It sounds, you know, people have a theory that Luthen, you know, is a Jedi or was a Jedi. You know, that's because of the Kyber crystal and his stick. I've sort of began to think, well, no, maybe he just
he runs a shop knows. Of rare stuff, so it would probably come through. Like, he might be suspicious and things, but I thought that was a bit silly. I didn't really buy that.
I don't buy it, but I thought maybe he at one stage had a child who was then taken by the Jedi and who was killed in Order 66, and he's retrieved the lightsaber hilt and the Kyber crystal, and this is revenge. Like, Luthen's angle is revenge.
Yeah, I mean,
he wants to overthrow the Empire, but it's revenge.
Yeah, there's definitely more to it than we know about as well. And the thing is, you know, he's talking about everything that he gave up and everything he sacrificed, but he's actually, then he's looking at people sacrificing their lives up close. You know what I mean? Like, he's not sacrificed his life. He's still breathing. Whether, you know, he keeps going about how much he has sacrificed. Then he sort of gets a proper look at them in the eye. Well, they're sort of pushing back. So it's quite interesting. I'll be curious to see where he goes next season. And we'll delve into this more next week. We talk about, we do the wrap up. But I think it'll be the impetus of, like, we need a base of operations. We actually need people power. We need an army. We can't just skull and dagger this. We need to get people together in groups. And we need a base of operations and all this sort of stuff. Like, it's...
Yeah.
We need the people power. Yeah, we need to coordinate. We need the people power. We can't just do these little jobs. We need a
fulcrum to communicate.
Yeah. I'm glad he made it through as well. I'm glad all the sort of main characters made it through to next time. Who knows? I mean, we're going to jump years in the next season, so we'll talk about that later, but it could be they'll start picking them off pretty easily. But we'll see. We might get those 5 seasons, so who knows? But that was quite fascinating. So, yeah, Cassian drops off the gang at the shipyard and they get away. And then as soon as Luthen got on that bike and went back to the ship, I'm like, Cassian's going to be there waiting for him. He'll know exactly where he parked from last time. I was worried he got into the ship. I thought he'd be sitting in the chair or something maybe, but that was quite a good moment.
Yeah. But of Cassian, he's in now. With all that he's seen, he is in, you know, with what he's went through on in the prison. Yeah, he's in. He's in.
Yeah. It was quite an interesting, just sort of, he just was like, well, I'm not running anymore. I'm not in it for me anymore. You decide, am I in this rebellion or are you basically just going to kill me off and am I just cannon fodder? Like, bring me in properly because I've got, you know, we talked about it last time. Like, where is he going to go? Like, he can't go anywhere. So deal me in properly or cut me loose.
Yeah.
And I think that was the whole thing. I mean, they had orders assumed that he was just a mercenary for hire. I know Luthen was saying that he knew some stuff about him, but I think it was more just using that as motivation to get him to do what he wanted at the time.
Yeah. I think Luthen suspected that he could be more than a thief.
Oh, but I think once he did the runner and took, you know, he shot the other guy and did the runner, I know he didn't take all the money, but at the same time he's like, well, he's only looking out for himself. He didn't even try to hang around and drop the money off or anything.
Yeah. But did you watch the previously on? Like where we had to watch Nemec getting killed again.
Get the crates of the guts, yeah.
Oh, like it just gets more brutal.
Well, the manifesto did get a good run out from this. I know your manifesto theories had been, you know, talked about on a few other podcasts. It didn't quite sort of finish it exactly like that, but it certainly played a big part. And it was certainly, it seems like that was his go-to. He was reading about it and he was, you know, a man who decided what he wanted to do with his life.
Yeah. It was Nemec's words that he listened to the night before he had to get Bix out and doing all of that against the Empire. They were the words that were going through his head. So Nemec's manifesto will continue to live on. It'll be interesting if it gets passed around members of the rebellion.
Mm. Well, he just becomes a lieutenant now, basically, doesn't he, Cassian? I think we'll talk about where he ends up. He ends up as Captain Cassian Andor, you know, what, the trusted agents of the Rebel Alliance. But there's a bit of water under the bridge there first. The Rebel Alliance doesn't really exist yet. But it seems that if he's going to become Luthen's number two, what does that mean for Clara, or what does that mean for other people who've been busting a gut for one to try and kill him? Yeah, how does he prove? Like, he seems to have proved to Luthen that he can be trusted at least enough to not kill him on the spot.
And
then we had the after credits. Did you stick around till after the credits?
Yep, saw that. So yes, those parts were for the radar dish, for the big dish on the Death Star. So all of my theories, of course, have gone to naught.
That they were being disassembled and put back up to the thing. It was a good theory. I mean, it was the most sort of likely, I think, just to tie it in with obviously Rogue One and what's going on at that time. And it was quite an interesting way that they showed it, that because I think that, you know, to sort of make sense of, because it was almost built at the end of Revenge of the Sith and 20 years later, it still wasn't finished. I think it was always the laser that was the bit to crack, in the tough part to crack anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's what, you know, Galen Erso was, you know, brought in to work on. That's what he was working on at first. He ran away, and that's what Krennic brought him back to work on.
Yeah,
because yeah, they just couldn't quite do it.
Otherwise, you've just got kind of big space station that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I don't know when they started construction of Death Star 2, but, you know, I've seen theories as to why that was so much quicker to build, was that they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, they've kind of nailed it. It's like a recipe, you know. Once you figured out how to do it the first time, it's just, you just rinse and repeat, basically, and get it done.
Yeah.
I mean, they built the, well, because they'd built Attack of the Clones, the end of Attack of the Clones, they're like, you know, the, what is it, the Geonos, like, rock, 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 you know, if they find out what we're going to build, rock, rock, rock. And what's Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, 3 years? So if they hadn't started it by Attack of the Clones, it means that...
I don't know if they'd started it then. They had the plans.
I know they had the plans, but I think they say, you know, if they find out what we're planning to build, I think the line is like, if they find out what we're planning to build, so it implies that they haven't started it yet, or at least by the end of Attack of the Clones. And then by Revenge of the Sith, it's sort of the shell's there. So that's already 3 years. So what's Star Wars to Jedi? That, 3 years, about the same?
That closing thing of Revenge of the Sith. I'm trying to link it back to Catalyst and I can't remember. Like, yeah, the... Yeah, see, it's... There'd still be... They'd only really just started it at the end of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, I don't think they had started it at all. Oh, the end of the Clone Wars. Oh, no. So the end of Attack of the Clones, the film, they hadn't started it. And then by the end of it, Revenge of the Sith, the film, when they show Vader and Tarkin and the Emperor standing in front of it, it's sort of like, I don't know, 30% done. Like the sort of the outside's there. So
was that even straight after the events of Revenge of the Sith? I've never believed that was straight afterwards. I've always thought there was a time jump there.
I always thought it just tied in with Luke and... Because it cuts between Luke and Leia being dropped off, and they look like they're maybe a month old at the most. I mean, I know it's movie baby, so they always look bigger than they're supposed to be. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know if Tarkin fully... Yeah, I'm just trying to think back to Catalyst. And the Geonosians were building it at first before they wiped them out.
Yep. They got the bug spray out and they got the Mortine out and some nasty business. That was a nice little... It was just a nice little tie-in. Whether it ties into season two, I guess we'll find out.
You wonder whether it's always Cassian wonders, what did they make us build? What were we building? Because we were building so many of them.
I wonder if they're... I have to go back and watch Rogue One, because, you know, at the start, obviously, he's like, you know, what are they building? What are they... You know, he shoots the informant, and the guy's like, it's a planet killer. Yeah. So whether he catches wind that they're building something, but we just don't know what it is. And he's like, hey, when I was in prison, we were building all this weird, like, the millions of the same part. They don't seem to belong in any other Star Destroyer or anything else that we know. So they're building something.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the start of Rogue One... Yeah, Cassian, because, Tivik says something about Galen Erso, or a pilot, you know, sent by Galen Erso, knows Galen Erso, and Cassian Andor reacts to the name Galen Erso. So they know that Galen Erso is a scientist working for the Empire.
Yeah.
They probably have suspicions about some kind of big weapon.
Yeah.
Whether or not Cassian has linked it to what he did in prison, who knows? But maybe in the season, in the episodes to come, we see little more sniffs along the way leading to the Death Star, which is something I have been thinking. I've probably said that we will see, it won't be just all about the Death Star, but we'll get little
snippets drops. Of, yeah, that they're up to something basically. Yeah. And it's a reaction to, you know, the revolution's coming, and it might even just be, well, they seem to be biding their time, the Empire. What are they doing? Like, what are they up to? Because the whole idea is Tarkin's like, as soon as we get this Death Star, we can basically just run the joint. No one's going to oppose us because we've got a great big thing that can blow up a planet and go anywhere.
Yeah.
So they might just be going, oh, this is weird. They're kind of letting us get away with more stuff. Like, what are they up to? Maybe that'll be in season 4 of Andor, Catherine, that Bobby Eye is going to green light. At Celebration London, when he's going to come out and he's going, okay, we've got the release date for Andor. It'll be that thing where the graphic will come up. It'll say, you know, September 2023, and then it'll go like season, and another logo will come up and say season 3, September 2024. You know, and it'll do this like, and you're just like, losing your mind.
Catherine losing her mind.
I know. It's like bugger being 10 feet from Diego Luna at the celebration stage. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting, just the reaction and everything from it. All right, we're going to round this sucker off soon. I don't want to do a full wrap-up of your feelings on the series, Catherine. We'll do that next time on the series wrap. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it completely did it completely excelled itself. It was a perfect ending. It had it all. It had enough dangling threads and enough closure. The action was perfect. The tension was perfect. It really, I don't know, it was just the cherry on top, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. It all, you know, feels so real. I mean, it's set in a galaxy far, far away. But yeah, it feels so real. And so many movies and things these days, if they have like a riot or that sort of frantic crowded streets, the camera moves like crazy. The camera wasn't doing that, I don't think. I have no memories of it. I was so sucked into the television. I don't know. But it was, you know, for me, honestly, my heart was pounding.
Aren't you glad you ended up watching it on a bigger telly than you were going to?
Yes.
There's a Thank little bit of backstory, much. Catherine. There's a very quick backstory. Catherine had the world's smallest television. For someone who's an avid consumer, it was like a 21-inch TV, which was perfectly, you know, watchable. And then I had an ex-colleague who was getting rid of a larger TV because they were upgrading. And I just said, oh, what are you doing with the other one? They're like, oh, I'm just going to, like, chuck it away or give it away. And I said, oh, well, I've got a friend who needs a bigger telly because this TV show that she really wants to watch is coming out. So I went around to Catherine's house and dropped off this larger TV. And we had a few technical mishaps, but we got it going. But I'm glad that, you know, you got to experience something on a slightly bigger scale. So next season, for season 2, we'll come and we'll drop over a 75-inch TV. We'll go even bigger again. We'll just peer every. If they do season 5, Catherine, you'll have to get one of those like big laser throwers that's like 150 inches on your wall.
Bobby I.
Yeah.
Bobby I, can you help me out with that?
Yeah. Could you throw us a few shekels? Bring back 5 seasons of Andor and buy Catherine a 150 inch television to watch it on. Just season 5. So we have to incrementally go up.
Yep.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you here every week, Catherine. Thanks for doing this. I know you have your own podcast, obviously, and you could have very easily have just done this on your own podcast. But I did sort of say, hey, would you be interested in coming on? Because I wanted to talk Andor every week and I couldn't think of anybody who'd be better to do it with. And the response has been great. People have loved it. They've, you know, loved hearing what you've had to say. And we'll come back. We'll do the roundtable in a few weeks. And we'll take a little break and we'll gear up for just regular episodes of the pod and then we'll gear up for season 2 whenever that drops.
Yeah, like thank you so much for having me on. Like having a chance to talk about Andor every week, not just to my cat, because I'm sure he's annoyed by me just talking Andor. It's been amazing. This show has just, God, you know, I had, it was everything. It was everything to me, this show. I've been counting down for years, hanging on for it to come, and the show has just delivered an amazing season, an amazing finale. Oh my God, it's just so good.
Let's not forget that they pushed it back a few weeks as well, remember?
Oh.
I'd forgotten about that until just then, like, oh my God, I completely forgot that we were supposed to watch, you know, it would have been over a few weeks. But the thing is, it would have been over 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and instead it's just finished now.
Yeah. And when are they showing the first two episodes on?
I think over Thanksgiving.
In America on some others? Yeah.
Yeah, I think on the ABC channel thing. So obviously they want more people to see it because they're just like, well, people who are into it are watching it and people, you know. But this is the best we've done. This is the absolute best thing that we've produced on Disney Plus, without a doubt. It's equally as good as the best Disney era Star Wars stuff, which I think The Last Jedi is the best in my opinion. I think this is just as good as The Last Jedi. It's pretty peerless, I think. I mean, the movies, the classic movies are the classic movies. I don't know whether anything will ever come up out that will mean as much to me as those movies, but this, as far as quality, it set a new bar. And I think when we get around the round table in a couple of weeks and get Dale and Matt and whoever else wants to come back on, I think we'll talk about what, like, where does Star Wars go from here? And I don't think it has to be like this because this is what it is, but I think the potential of what you can do is really evident. And I think you know, that's something that they should be striving for.
You know, Star Wars without mention of the Force, without mention of the Jedi, it's possible. The galaxy is fascinating enough. And brilliant characters, brilliant writing. Yeah, it's being amazing television. Just amazing. So, yeah, Tony Gilroy, hats off to you. You know, we'll swap hats, you and me, Tony.
I feel like I know we're wrapping up here, but I feel like I've just sort of, and I know it wasn't him that did it, but the fact that he sort of took over Rogue One, I kind of just like, all right, I get it now. I understand. I feel bad for Gareth Edwards. I hope he comes back to Star Wars. I think he's a really good filmmaker and I hope he gets to play in that sandbox again.
Yeah.
Because of that schmozzle.
I hope Gareth doesn't get forgotten.
No, I don't think so.
Because I think they did a lot of work on the story. I think he was, my own personal theory is that the story was more of the issue than Gareth's directing and film making. Does that make sense? Like how he shot the film, what he was doing. Yeah.
We'll work that out. That'll certainly part of the roundtable, I think.
Do you think we'll get a behind the scenes special?
Oh, like yeah, absolutely.
Gallery.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't know whether you'll get a six-parter or something, but they'll do something. So,
I want a six-parter.
Six seasons in a movie. Well, thanks everybody for listening. That concludes Andor season as far as the episodes go. But like I said, we're going to do a roundtable in a week or two when we can get everybody, all the previous guests on, and then whoever else in our little world who wants to come on as well. And that's it. Thank you, Catherine. I'll let you sign off this Andor season.
Yeah. Well, I should say I'm on Twitter at Catherine_Neen. I'm on Hive now. Catherine Neen, no underscore.
Dated really quick. It'll be exciting when everybody's back on something else. But anyway.
Oh, it changes all the time. And yeah, that Geek Pod. At some point, work should settle down. Surely work should stop being this crazy at some point in time. So I'll line up some interviews for post post Andor where I can just talk at people for an hour about Andor and they can just nod along and say, yes, yes, you're right, Catherine, yes, yes. So that's at That Geek Pod on Twitter. Yeah. We're one day closer to Andor season two.
What a way to end. Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.